Bible study. We have come to Psalm number 98. So we want to start with our summary statement for Psalm 98. Psalm 98 calls Israel, the nations, and all the earth to sing praise to Yahweh the King, who will come to earth in judgment and salvation. I'll go over that one more time. Psalm 98 calls Israel, the nations, and all the earth to sing praise to Yahweh the King, who will come to earth in judgment and salvation. A simple outline for this psalm would be in two parts, verses 1 to 3, what has been, will be. Verses 4 to 9, what will be, will be. So I'll go over that one more time. Verses 1 to 3, what has been, will be. What will be, I'm sorry. Verses 1 to 3, what has been, will be. Verses 4 to 9, what will be, will be. All right, so we're going to go to our observations for Psalm 98. Psalm 98 has no superscription. Jewish tradition has attributed it to David. Now we looked at in the previous Psalms that Psalm 95 attributed to David, Psalm 96 and Psalm 97 that had connections with 1 Chronicles chapter 16. So this Psalm, though, doesn't have those connections with 1 Chronicles 16 like those previous Psalms had. And so while it certainly could have been written by David, I think we're much less certain about that than what we could say of the previous ones. As far as musical direction, the psalm calls for shouts of joy, joyful singing. The use of various instruments are mentioned, the lyre, the voice, clarion trumpets, curved trumpets, that sort of thing. There's no other musical direction given beyond that. There's no occasion indicated, since there is no superscription and there's nothing in the text of the psalm that would indicate an occasion as well. Now, the time that is written about is the future coming of the Lord. But as far as the occasion for the writing of the psalm, we don't have any indication about that. To categorize Psalm 98, I would call it a praise psalm. It has the standard conventions of a praise psalm where you get calls to praise followed by reasons to praise. And this is where we've talked about things like the catalog of praiseworthy acts and attributes of God. And so we have those in that psalm, and that would be the primary categorization for the psalm. It does have minor elements. We have creation and nature references, so we have references to the habitable land of the earth as well as the waters and the hills and other natural references. This psalm is also what I would categorize as messianic because it refers to the king, the Lord, the king. So the coming of the king is a part of this particular psalm. And I would also categorize it as prophetic predictive. The future coming of the Lord means judgment and salvation, and it is looking forward to that. And you can see, like the tense in verse number 9, he cometh to judge the earth. He shall, with righteousness shall he judge the world, and so on. So that is looking to a future coming when the king will come and bring judgment upon the earth and deliverance for his people. Now, Psalm 98 does have the connections, since we've started in book number 4 of the Psalms, beginning with Psalm number 90, and we've seen so far how all of these Psalms have continued with certain themes, like judgment and righteousness, themes of rejoicing, themes of Yahweh as King. Those sort of thematic elements have continued throughout these Psalms. This psalm particularly does have close connections with Psalm number 96. So Psalm number 96, you also get the singing of a new song. So in verses 1 to 3, and in verses 1 to 3 here in Psalm 98 as well. And that's how both psalms open. And then both psalms also have similar endings, referring to the coming in judgment. So verses 7 to 9 here in Psalm 98, and then in verses 11 to 13 in Psalm 96. Now this psalm also has some external connections. And so one of the things that we've noticed in the Psalms of Book 4 so far is that there has been an exile theme, an exodus theme, reaching back to that time in Israel's history. Well, this psalm has external connections with Exodus 15 and the Song of Moses. It also has external connections with Isaiah chapters 40 to 66, that ending second half of Isaiah. There's several references to the coming of the Lord and judgment and salvation. We'll look at some more of those when we get to interpretation of the psalm, but it does have a number of those strong connections as well. The poetic features of Psalm 98 would be, obviously you read the psalm and you notice that the mood of the psalm is very bright and is very joyous. The tone of the psalm is celebratory. And we noticed, for instance, in the previous psalm, the mood of the psalm was somewhat darker as you had that Sinai imagery of the presence of the Lord with the clouds and the storm and all of that sort of thing. And this psalm, even though you do have a couple of references to judgment, for the most part, it's referring to the salvation and the celebration, the joy and rejoicing as a result of his coming. This psalm does utilize some repetition, and we have references in the psalm that bring in the extremes. So references, the poetic references to the extremes are used to indicate the whole. So we have land and water and hills and nations and Israel, all that come out in this particular psalm. And so when you think about it, that's the earth as a whole, all of the land, all of the water, the hills, all the natural elements of the earth, and then the nations, the various people groups that throughout the earth, and then the nation of Israel as well. All right, so we want to work our way through Psalm 98. There are 9 verses, so I'll go ahead and read these. O sing unto the Lord a new song, for he hath done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm hath gotten him the victory. The Lord hath made known his salvation. His righteousness hath he openly showed in the sight of the heathen. He hath remembered his mercy and his truth toward the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all the earth. Make a loud noise, and rejoice, and sing praise. Sing unto the Lord with the harp and the voice of a psalm, with trumpets and sound of cornet. Make a joyful noise before the Lord, the King. Let the sea roar and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. Let the floods clap their hands, let the hills be joyful together. Before the Lord, for he cometh to judge the earth, with righteousness shall he judge the world and the people with equity. So verses 1 to 3 give us the opening call to praise. And again, very common in the praise psalm as a category. We have this opening call to praise. Now, immediately, the first line, "Oh, sing unto the Lord a new song," this call to sing a new song. And this is the fourth of six occurrences in the psalm of the singing of a new song. So we have Psalm 33 and verse 3. We have Psalm 40 and verse 3. We have Psalm 96 in verse 1, just a couple of psalms back. This one, Psalm 98 and verse 1. And then we have two more to go in the psalms, Psalm 144 and verse 9, and Psalm 149 and verse 1. So these are the six occurrences of or references to a new song in the psalms. And we also have three that are outside of the psalms in the rest of the Bible. So we have one time in Isaiah chapter 42 and verse number 10, and then we have two references in the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 5 and verse 9, Revelation chapter 14 and verse number 3. Now, all of these appearances, and we've talked about this new psalm, particularly back in Psalm 96, and so I'm not going to go over all of those aspects of the new song again, but just to remind you that every time that this reference to singing a new song occurs, it occurs in reference to the Messiah and his kingdom come to the earth. So when he comes to establish his kingdom upon this earth, then will the new song be sung. So again, we've talked about the new song at different times. We've been going through the Psalms, and again recently in Psalm 96. And so here I want to talk about something else with the new song, and this is brought about particularly because of the connections with Exodus chapter 15. So if this is the new song, then what is the old song? And if you think about for instance, like the writer of Hebrews, when he refers to the new covenant, and we have the new covenant mentioned, "Behold, I'll make a new covenant with the house of Judah, with the house of Israel." So God says that. So that phrase appears, new covenant. And the writer of Hebrews picked up on that and said, by saying that there's a new covenant, he makes the other one old. Well, we talk about the old covenant quite a bit. And when we talk about the old covenant, we're referring to the Sinai covenant, the Mosaic covenant, the old covenant that contains the law. All of those things would be referring to the old covenant. But the Bible itself never calls it the old covenant. But the writer of Hebrews says, by saying that God's going to make a new covenant with the house of Israel, then that means that he has made the other old. Well, and this is sort of similar. It's not exactly like that, but this is sort of similar when it comes to the new song and the old song. So what is the old song? Well, we can figure out what the old song is by the allusions, particularly the allusions to the song of Moses in Exodus chapter 15, verses 1 to 19. All right, so the song of Moses was sung after that God had delivered the people of Israel from Egypt through all of the plagues and the various wonders that he had shown there. And then they come to the Red Sea, and they're pinned in, and essentially there's no escape, and Pharaoh and his army is bearing down on them, and they're told to see the salvation of God. And so God has Moses hold the rod, and he parts the waters of the Red Sea so that all of the host of Israel, they go across on dry ground, and they come to the other side, and the waters, then the Pharaoh pursues them into the channel that was made there. And when Pharaoh and his armies in the midst of the Red Sea, then the waters are brought back and destroys all of them. He's drowned the horse and his rider in the sea. And so after this miraculous deliverance, this wondrous deliverance, this salvation of the people of Israel, they've been redeemed from Egypt now, and their enemies have been drowned. They have been destroyed. And of course, they go to the shore and they pick up the weapons and the armaments and all these sort of things for their use. And so that's the context. That's when the song of Moses was sung, because this is a new thing that the Lord has done at this point when he's delivered his people this way from Egypt. And so in the song of Moses and here in Psalm 98, you get a number of overlapping references. You get references to wondrous or marvelous things. You get references to the right hand, to the holy arm. I mean, God has God has made his arm bare in delivering Israel from Egypt in this manner. You get reference to the righteousness of God that has been displayed, his judgment that has been shown on his enemies, the salvation or the redemption of Israel that has occurred, and the fact that all of this has been seen by the nations. Well, when you look at Psalm 98, you get all of these echoes in Psalm 98 from Exodus chapter 15. And so the old song, then, we generally refer to it as the Song of Moses, but we really could call it the Song of Yahweh. So the old song is the Song of Yahweh that was sung by Moses when God acted in remembrance of his covenant to come in judgment on the nation of Egypt in particular and to deliver Israel in the sight of all the nations. So then the old song is the Song of Yahweh sung by Moses then, and the new song is the Song of Messiah, the Song of Messiah that will be sung when he acts in remembrance of his covenant to come to the earth and judge the nations and redeem and restore Israel. And so that's the new song, and that's the focus of this particular psalm. So you've got allusions to the old song that was then the new song, and in these allusions to the old song, we have a psalm that is looking forward to and focusing on the singing of the new song that will be sung when the Messiah comes, when he comes, the king comes to establish his kingdom. Now, we do have reference to all these things, marvelous things, wondrous works that God's done, his holy arm, his right hand, has gotten him the victory. This word for victory and the word for salvation in verse number 2, these are different words. The word for victory, again, has more of that thought of a victory, of an overcoming, of a triumph. And the word for salvation is the more common word for that, and usually means deliverance or rescue. This is done in the remembrance. You see that in verse number 3, that he remembered his mercy and his truth toward the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Now, that's what God did then, there in Egypt, there at the Red Sea. Now, the fact that he has remembered, again, and we've talked about this a few different times, this language of God remembering. It's not that God has forgotten or that God could forget, but this language of remembering is a covenantal reference. And it is a reference to God's actions in fulfillment of covenant promises that he has made. And this is further reinforced because what he remembered was his mercy and his truth toward the house of Israel. Well, mercy and truth that are mentioned here, these are not just in general attributes of God, but these are actually, the word for mercy is chesed in the Hebrew. The word for truth, emunah, which means his trustworthiness, his faithfulness. So this is a, especially when these two terms are used together, this is a covenantal reference. This is God's loyalty and trustworthiness to keep his covenant promises. And we've talked about how that chesed doesn't have a real good English equivalent. Sometimes steadfast love, sometimes loving kindness, sometimes mercy. And generally, when it is used, it is in reference to God's covenant mercy, that God shows his loyalty to Israel in showing his mercy, his love, to fulfill his promises and his truth or his trustworthiness. That his word is trustworthy. And we also see here that so then the basis of the celebration in this psalm, it's the redemption of Israel. He has shown this toward the house of Israel, and the result is what? All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God, the deliverance, the rescue. It's the redemption of his people Israel that's the basis of the celebration in this psalm. And it is the redemption of his people Israel according to his covenant that is what is the result or what results in everything else that we see. So everything in the psalm after verse number 3 then is flowing from it. So really what we have here in this psalm, in verses 1 to 3, is we have the historical reference that refers to his deliverance of Israel from Egypt and at the Red Sea, and allusions to that song of Yahweh that was sung then. And then that being the basis of what God will do in the future. So he has done this, and he's going to do this. He's going to redeem and restore his people, and all the ends of the earth will see his salvation. Verses 4 to 6, then, call the earth to praise. And so again, this is looking forward to the time when Messiah the King comes, and calling the earth to praise, to make that joyful noise, that joyful shout, and to have this loud singing of praise to the Lord the King. And we have that phrase that is used there in verse number 6. And so this celebration extends to all of the earth, hence all of the nations of the earth. And we do have references here again. We've talked about, like, back in verse 2, that word for heathen, that is the plural goyim, which is nations. We also have the word amin for people, that again, it's plural peoples, or maybe even better yet, nations that is referred to. So this celebration extends to all the ends of the earth. So his coming and his redeeming and restoring of the people of Israel, according to his covenant, is going to result in all the nations of the earth singing joyful praise to him. Of course, in verse number 6, we have the mention of the different instruments. Verse 5 and 6, the harp or the lyre, the voice of a psalm or a song, the trumpets, the sound of the cornet, the trumpet being that clarion trumpet, the cornet being that curved trumpet, all of these employed along with the voicing, the singing of a song of praise to the Lord the King. And that's why? Because he has come. Verses 7 and 8 then call on the creation itself to praise God. So we get, this is what we refer to poetically as personification. So we get the sea is roaring. So it's like, and I know that the sea roars when you listen to the sea and you listen to the roaring of the waves and the crashing of the waves, or even if you listen to the noise of a waterfall or something like that, we know that that's a roaring. This roaring, though, is like the sea giving loud voice to praise. We have the floods or the rivers clapping their hands and the hills being joyful and expressing that joy. So the rivers and the seas and the hills and all the habitable land of the earth, inclusive of all life in all of these realms, are celebrating the coming of the King, and they're called to praise and called to joy. And of course, one of the reasons why is because his coming also means the reversal of the curse, the restoration of the creation, their liberation from bondage, as Paul puts it there in Romans chapter number 8. And then the psalm ends here in verse number 9, giving the reason for praise, because the Lord, he comes. The Lord the King that was mentioned there in verse number 6, he's coming. He's coming to judge the earth. He's coming to judge the earth, and with righteousness, he's going to judge the world. And he's going to judge the people, or the Amim, the peoples, the nations, with equity. So the Lord will come to the earth. So he's coming to judge the earth. He's coming to establish justice on the earth, or equity through his kingdom on the earth. All right, so let's move now to our interpretation for Psalm 98. So Psalm 98 teaches the surety, the certainty of God's coming judgment. So this is a psalm that's looking forward to the future coming of the Lord, the King, coming to the earth. And his coming involves judgment, and it involves the redemption and the restoration of Israel, and it involves the establishment of justice, which means the establishment of his kingdom, where he rules in righteousness over all of the earth. So the certainty of God's coming judgment. So we have this allusion. The psalm starts with this allusion to the Exodus, to the Red Sea crossing. And what that Exodus and Red Sea crossing does is that it gives a tangible evidence of his promises being kept, his promises being fulfilled, his mercy and truth being shown. So he acted then, if we look back to the Exodus and the Red Sea crossing, he acted then according to his covenant. And he acted so as to display his glory to the nations. And all of this was memorialized then by a new song. Well, in the same way, he will come in the future to us. He, just as he did then, he will come to fulfill all of his promises, the remainder of his promises to Israel, which means that there will be judgment on the nations. Those enemy nations, there will be judgment on them. There will be judgment on the unbelieving of Israel. This is a great purging of the nations and of Israel and of the earth that is to take place. And there will be a redemption of the faithful of Israel, those who turn to their Messiah, their conversion to their Messiah. And there will be a restoration of Israel as a nation to the land that was promised to their fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob specifically, and a restoration of the creation by the lifting of the curse. And all of this will be celebrated by a new, new song. And that is what this psalm refers to, and that is what the new song is referring to, as we see its references here in the Psalms, as well as in Isaiah and the book of Revelation as well. So in other words, this psalm bids us to look back to what God has done for the sake of his own name in the past as a reminder and as an assurance that he will keep all of his word both now, presently, and into the future when he fulfills all of his covenant promises in remembrance of his mercy and truth to the house of Israel. So the messianic hope in this psalm is seen in the prophesied coming of the king. The coming of the king to bring judgment and to establish righteousness on the earth. It's his coming that does this. His coming is also because of the remembrance of his covenant mercy, of his covenant faithfulness to the house of Israel. So there's a lot of overlap here between this and the previous psalm in this regard. And so we're not going to rehash all of those particular references. We talked about, for instance, how that the Bible goes on to speak of this day of judgment, this coming of the Lord, that God has appointed a man by which he's going to judge the world. And who is that? Well, it's the one that he gave witness to by raising him from the dead. It's Jesus Christ. It is the Messiah, the anointed Son of God that is going to come. And so we're not going to go over all of those things again. You can look at the previous psalm and some of the study there. So in this psalm, as we're thinking about the messianic hope of this psalm, we can assess the message of this psalm in light of the connections that this psalm has with particular prophetic passages that speak of this coming. And I'm particularly thinking about that second half of Isaiah chapters 40 to 66, and all of these references that prophesy the future redemption of Israel through judgment, and this comes with the coming of the Messiah. So we're going to start in Isaiah chapter 44, and we're just going to look at a few references. I'm not going to make a whole lot of comments. I'm going to read some verses in a few different places here in this second half of Isaiah, and places that connect with Psalm number 98 that are evidently speaking of the same time. So we look at Psalm 44, verses 21 to 23. Remember these, O Jacob and Israel, for thou art my servant. I have formed thee. Thou art my servant, O Israel. Thou shalt not be forgotten of me. I have blotted out as a thick cloud thy transgressions, and as a cloud thy sins. Return unto me, for I have redeemed thee. Sing, O ye heavens, for the Lord hath done it. Shout, ye lower parts of the earth. Break forth into singing, ye mountains, O forest, and every tree therein. For the Lord hath redeemed Jacob and glorified himself in Israel. So here we get mention of the remembrance that God has made of his promises to the house of Israel. We also get this call to praise in the singing, particularly by the creation, the heavens, the lower parts of the earth, the forest, the trees, the mountains. And again, why are they singing? Well, in verse 23, it's because the Lord has redeemed Jacob. The Lord has glorified himself, or made his glory known, his salvation to be seen in Israel, and his deliverance of them in remembrance of his covenant. Isaiah chapter 49, verses 13 to 26, the end of the chapter. Let's see, we'll read a few verses here. Beginning verse 13, "Sing, O heavens, and be joyful, O earth, and break forth into singing, O mountains. For the Lord hath comforted his people, and will have mercy upon his afflicted. But Zion said, The Lord hath forsaken me, and my Lord hath forgotten me. Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee. Behold, I have graven thee upon the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me." And he goes on reading there. You can read that to the rest of the chapter. And again, we get these references to the singing of creation in this chapter. And that rejoicing has come about because why? The Lord has remembered Israel. So that theme of remembrance. Israel will be in exile to where they believe they've been forgotten. They believe they've been forsaken. But yet God says he will not forsake and he will not forget. In other words, he will remember. Isaiah chapter 51, verses 1 to 6. "Hearken to me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Lord. Look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and to the hole of the pit whence ye are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare you, for I called him alone, and blessed him, and increased him. For the Lord shall comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places. He will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. Hearken unto me, my people, O give ear unto me, O my nation, for a law shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgment to rest for a light of the people. My righteousness is near, my salvation is gone forth, and mine arms shall judge the people. The isles shall wait upon me, and on mine arms shall they trust. Lift up your eyes to the heavens, and look upon the earth beneath, for the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. But my salvation shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished." Speaking about establishment of his kingdom. So we see again references here to the joy and the singing that this coming of the Lord brings. His righteousness being seen, his righteousness being established in the earth, his arm doing this, his hand doing this. And we see the judgment of the earth on the nations of the earth and such. Isaiah chapter 52. Let's look at verses 9 and 10. "Break forth into joy, sing together, ye waste places of Jerusalem, for the Lord hath comforted his people, he hath redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord hath made bare his holy arm in the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God." So here again, we get this singing, this joy, this celebration, this rejoicing. We get the redemption of Israel. We get reference to the nations seeing his salvation, this covering to the ends of the earth. It's not just Israel alone, but all the nations of the earth, all of that creation of the earth, and his holy arm that will do this. Isaiah chapter 55. Let's look at verses 12 and 13. For ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace, and the mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree, and it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. Again, references to the singing and the personification of the creation, the trees of the field and so on. And we also get here the redemption of creation, that curse being lifted, the earth being restored. And again, this is in reference to his covenant and the remembrance of his covenant to his people of Israel. And so the redemption of Israel leads to this restoration of the earth and this singing of praise. Isaiah chapter 59. You can look at verses 14 to 21 here in Isaiah chapter 59. And judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. Yea, truth faileth, and he that departeth from evil maketh himself a prey, and the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. So this is talking about the lack of judgment, the lack of justice in the earth, the lack of righteousness in the earth. Verse 16, and he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore his arm brought salvation unto him, and his righteousness it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and a helmet of salvation upon his head, and he put on the garments of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. According to their deeds, accordingly he will repay. Fury to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies. To the islands he will repay recompense. So shall they fear the name of the Lord from the west, and his glory from the rising of the sun. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up a standard against him, and the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, saith the Lord. As for me, this is my covenant with them, saith the Lord. My spirit that is upon thee, and my words which I have put in thy mouth, shall not depart out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of the mouth of thy seed's seed, saith the Lord, from henceforth and forever. So again, we get references to this justice that comes to the earth with the coming of the Messiah, and the fact that it's God's arm, and the fact that it's God's arm that's made bare means that it's a miraculous work, and it's a work that man can't do. Man cannot establish justice on the earth. Man cannot establish righteousness on the earth. Only the coming of the King and the establishment of his kingdom can establish righteousness on the earth. And of course, this is also tied to the redemption of Israel. And we'll do one more. Isaiah chapter 63, verses 4 to 8. For since the beginning of the world, men have... that's the wrong chapter. Isaiah chapter 63. Yes, this is one is right. Isaiah chapter 63, verses 4 to 8. For the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. And I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore mine own arm brought salvation unto me, and my fury it upheld me. And I will tread down the people in mine anger, and make them drunk in my fury, and I will bring down their strength to the earth. I will mention the loving kindnesses of the Lord and the praises of the Lord according to all that the Lord hath bestowed on us and the great goodness toward the house of Israel, which he hath bestowed on them according to his mercies and according to the multitude of his loving kindnesses. For he said, surely they are my people, children that will not lie. So he was their Savior. So again, we get this reference here to the arm of the Lord, that it is his arm that does this. It's his arm that brings this justice to the earth, that judges the world, that remembers and redeems the house of Israel. We also get reference to his hesed, his loving kindnesses that we saw there. That again, that term hesed. So again, all of these places are referring to these same events. They're referring to this same time, and all of these connections with terms and phrases and imagery that connects this psalm number 98 with this time that's looking forward to this future coming of the Lord. And so obviously the messianic hope is seen that it's his arm and his arm alone that can and will do this. All right, so let's go to our applications. I have three of these. What does Psalm 98 say to us as modern readers? Well, understanding, number one, understanding Psalm 98 helps us understand that the present state, and this present state is still the state of exile for Israel. It's the time of the nations, the age of the nations, and it is exile for Israel. The present state is not what has always been, and it's not what will always be. So God has acted in history at predetermined points of time to fulfill his plan. One of those obviously being the Exodus from Egypt and the crossing of the Red Sea. And the point that we are to understand is, as we read this passage that looks back to that time and looks forward to his coming, is that he has acted in the past and throughout history, and he will act in the time that is future to us as well. In other words, God is going to fulfill every jot and tittle of this word. Number two, understanding Psalm 98 helps us understand that God will not just let the world go. So we can discern in our time how things get worse. But that doesn't mean that there's never a better out there. Not that our better will be brought in by our strength or our abilities. Not at all. But ultimately, there will be a better, but that better will only be with the coming of the Lord. So it's not that we cannot redeem and save the earth. We can't redeem and save the nations. We can't redeem and save Israel. All of these things that are necessary to this better coming, when there's actually equitable justice over all of the earth, and the righteousness of the Lord is covering the earth as the waters cover the sea. Number three, understanding Psalm 98 also helps us understand the purifying hope of Christ and his coming. And John wrote that this hope of his coming, it is purifying. 1 John chapter 3 and verse number 3. Now what that means is, when we study a psalm like this, we are studying what might be called eschatology. We're studying prophecy. We're studying things that the Bible says about events that will come, things that haven't happened yet, but will happen. The Bible has prophesied many things that were future at the writing of the Bible, and a lot of things have already happened. A lot of things have already been fulfilled, have already come to pass. And so these things will come to pass. And the study of that, the study of eschatology, is something that so many times people are discouraged by. They think it's some hopelessly complicated labyrinth of charts and graphs and a bunch of misty symbols where nothing ever means, you know, what it says. And I'm sort of reminded of a Sunday school teacher that I had one time, and we were in some sort of conversation, and it might have been Revelation or something else we were talking about. I don't remember exactly, but I distinctly remember him telling me, you know, look, sometimes the Bible tells us it's a white horse because that's what color the horse is, or what color the horse was. In other words, you know, he was telling me, don't approach the Bible as if it's some sort of a secret code where everything means something else than what it said. That's just not true. So eschatology is not, you know, just hopelessly complicated and impossible to understand. And it's also not something for us to just fight about, which is something that certainly Christians do like to do. But the real benefit of studying what the Bible says about these future events is having this hope of the coming of the Lord, having this hope that this earth will be redeemed, and that nations will be redeemed, and that Israel will be redeemed and restored, that his kingdom, it will come to this earth one day. It will be established on this earth one day. And the Bible tells us that that's a purifying hope. It has a purifying effect in our lives. If we truly cling to these things, understand these things, hold to these things, then we live our lives in light of Christ's sure coming, then it purifies and sanctifies us in this present life.